Living Faith with Father Richard Umbers.
One of the dogmas of our time, even though we often hear the term, well, you can believe what you want to believe, what's true for you is true for you. There are so many dogmas in our society, one of which is that you have to keep your faith to yourself. Keep your opinions to yourself. Don't force your point of view on anyone else. The Catholic faith, in many ways, is like smoking, tobacco. It's something that pertains to another age. It's a vice of our grandparents. It shouldn't be given to children. If anything, it has to be in plain packaging. Don't advertise. Restricted, you know, okay, it's a vice that perhaps we'll allow some people to indulge in, but, you know, as long as they keep it to themselves and don't influence anybody else. And then I'll kind of tolerate that freedom to worship in private. But don't you dare say anything anywhere to anyone else. And that's not faith. You can have perhaps a private spirituality, sure, but faith just isn't like that. Certainly not religion, which is necessarily shared, necessarily social. How did we receive our faith? By illumination? Well, yes, there's a certain grace required for us to have faith. But we were raised in the faith. Our parents, our parish church, and they, in their turn, because of different priests, different bishops, missionaries, and it goes all the way back to the apostles. We receive our faith in an environment of faith, in a community of faith. The local parish, our school, our family, extended family, they all play an integral role in our faith. Our friends too. The people with whom we get together for spiritual direction and for spiritual activities. How can we talk about the faith as being private? It just doesn't make sense. It's necessarily social. To be a human being is to be social. The faith affects everything about us. It's not simply a question of worship that one does on one's own in the kitchen on a Friday or something. It's who I am. It's my identity. And my identity is part and parcel of my family and my friends and the choices I make. And we think about, here concretely in Australia, when the Holy Father came for World Youth Day, and he asked us to remember the example of our teachers and of our parents and of those first missionaries who came to Australia and those people of faith who also came here and sought to live out their faith. And we see St. Mary's Cathedral dominating the skyline in Sydney. It's such a beautiful church, but that was the fruit of the faith of simple people who made that beautiful building at quite some effort and sacrifice. We appreciate the legacy of those sacrifices. And we ourselves have to ask, well, what am I doing for the future? What do you want of me, Lord, in that regard? How am I contributing to the spread of the faith? Because we need to create a culture within which we can breathe and live. We have to take a concern for human ecology so that we live in an environment where virtue is fostered, where the faith can be lived with freedom. That means, of course, respecting other people's points of view, other people's religious choices. We believe in freedom of religion. But that doesn't mean freedom from religion. And the reality is that, you know, nature abhors a vacuum, so to speak. Although you have to talk to the scientists about that one. But for the purposes of rhetoric, we see that where Catholics are less present, less active, another worldview will take its place. What is that worldview? There's no neutrality. We have to convince ourselves, yes, we need to be fair, yes, we need to allow other people to have, you know, their points of view, but it's never going to be neutral. Secularism is not neutrality. It is its own worldview, especially in the area of sexuality. If we do not put forward a Christian worldview, it will be dominated by a pagan worldview. And so you create a culture of death. If there's a problem, you walk away from it, or you kill it. A world dominated by hedonism, in the ultimate sense of that term, where it's all about units of pleasure. And we realize that is not the human condition. The human condition embraces aspects of suffering, constraint, sickness, limitation. And to think otherwise would be utopian, not found in any place, and would lead to many unintended consequences of sadness. Well, that is our belief. That is our worldview, and I can't just keep that to myself. And I work actively towards creating a culture in which I believe others will be happy. I'm not there to try to impose commands that come arbitrarily from my own mind, just to kill people's fun. The faith, in its very inception, is apostolic, made to be passed on. And that's a real bone of contention with our society. You just keep it to yourself. I can't. Well, then, you don't belong here. Well, sorry, I'm here. You're going to have to deal with that. Well, we'll shut you down. Well, you can try, but after 2,000 years, you really think that those tactics are going to work? Every time you stand on us, squash us, it only serves to make the seed spread. Read the Acts of the Apostles. Every time the church gets persecuted, more people find out about it. It's a publicity money can't buy. Hey, what is this stuff? But at a more basic level, you know, how am I really contributing to this society? There's an early Christian writer from the 3rd century who writes in his letter to Diognetus that we Christians, although we are from yesterday, yet we are found everywhere today. And we cannot be distinguished from anyone else by our manner of speech, by the clothes that we wear, by the food that we eat. We're the same as anyone else. But we are different from the point of view that although we share our table, we don't share our bed. We don't expose our babies. We don't go to the theater where there are immoral plays. And though we seek the salvation of the world, we are hated by everybody. Although we seek to save the world rejects us. And what the soul is to the body, so we Christians are to the world. We are called to be leaven, mixed in with the mass, that makes the whole dough rise. And it only takes a small group of very committed Christians to make an enormous difference in society. Think, when you look at that movie Amazing Grace, about those Christians who pushed for the abolition of slavery. What a difference they made. Other small groups of people make a big difference against the faith, against good morals. If we look at the push, which seems irrepressible, for homosexual marriage, you know, it's really, it comes down to it. There's the push by certain elites who really believe, who get together and have a big impact. Well, laws that have changed can be changed again. It's not that inevitable where people are saying, well, this is progress. Well, we can create our own kind of progress. We can change things back. But for that, of course, it requires tremendous courage, resolution. That doesn't come from our own strength, but rather it comes, we know, Lord, from prayer, from commitment to you, Jesus. Because it's not a question of fostering our own ego, or, you know, trying to look good, because we're not going to look good. We know that. We're going to be attacked. We're going to be told all manner of things. Some of it will be true. You know, we have to be always humble, always listening. And when you know, even if someone is far, far, far from the truth, but you know, in their criticism, they'd probably latch onto something that may be worth listening to. And how we present ourselves and how we do things, we have to be always, you know, open to that. And nevertheless, if we're humble, if we pray, if we're coherent, we'll realize that, no, Lord, you know, you want for us to create this culture of life, to build up a civilization that is based on love. And what we mean by love, which you show us, Jesus, in your very life, in your very death. Love involves suffering as its inner dimension. It doesn't mean being hygienic. We live in a society that just wants to be hygienic. You can do anything you want as long as it's not too messy. You clean up after yourself. Well, no. There's dirt. Life is messy. We don't want it to be messy. It's messy. And we can embrace that when we love, when we see what it truly means to value someone as made in the image and likeness of God. Even if they look funny, they are made in the image and likeness of God. And we embrace that too. We don't put our children up for abortion just because they have a defect. They are even more to be loved. And that changes a whole society. And when it comes to our own friends and how we approach life, we believe in marriage, which is a commitment for life. But what happens if you have fights? What happens if one of them leaves you? What happens if... We believe in marriage for life. Commitment, which is made for life, even though it can be broken. When there's a difficulty, we don't just move on. That struggle is part and parcel of what it means to become a saint. And it makes for an environment in which children can be brought up with that stability of parents who you know, are first and foremost concerned for the good of their kids. We believe in chastity. And for some, that will mean celibacy. You'll die if you don't do it. You know, well, no, you don't die if you don't do it. It's an option. It's a genuine option. No, but it's so cruel and all the rest. No, it's not. Grace is there. You know, it's a reality. It's possible. It's a different way of looking at life. It's a different worldview. But it's one in which we are called to take up arms. And will that mean disagreement? You bet. But through our very lives, we need to prove that it is possible with the grace that you give us, Lord. And that is the apostolate to which we are called, the spreading of our faith, the sharing of our faith, by living our faith and inviting others to take part in that. How does the faith spread? Because ordinary Christians live their faith and share it with their colleagues. And how do I share it? Do I have to, you know, play a tambourine? Do I have to knock on people's doors? Do I have to, you know, but I have to be a good friend. I have to follow the example of the apostles. They spoke to their friends. John speaks with James. Andrew speaks with Simon. Together they speak with Philip, fellow townsman. Philip speaks to Nathanael, a good mate of his. And they speak in very clear terms with each other. Hey, we found the Messiah. Well, who is he? Jesus of Nazareth. Nazareth? Nazareth? Who? No, it comes from Nazareth. You've got to be kidding me. It's a bit like saying, we found the one. Who is it? John of Wollongong. Wollongong? Who's going to come out of Wollongong? I mean, Dapto. You know, they spoke. They spoke with each other. They shared their lives with each other. And that's what we do. And Lord, you have close mates. You offer your friendship. You even say to the apostles, I call you my friends. Because you know the will of the Father. The other day I heard an interview by a philosophy professor on a podcast. I like listening to podcasts on philosophy. And this fellow, he was very erudite, speaking about Neoplatonism, but mentioned that, well, you know, with these early Christians, of course, you know, they didn't understand what it meant to have, you know, a close relationship with God. God was always someone very far off, very far away. You know, the grandeur of God and everything. And so you can understand the appeal of the sort of Neoplatonism of the one who was beyond everyone. And they're going, say, what? Have you read the Bible? Have you got a clue what the early church fathers actually say? Don't you realize it's all about the incarnation? God becoming one of us? The Word was made flesh? And we see that affection, Lord, that you have with the others. And we see that also in the lives of the saints and their concern for the others. That you think they weren't human? We see you, Lord, as our best friend, the friend. And we don't want to let you down, Lord. We don't want to be disloyal to you. Lord, you feel in your heart when Lazarus dies and you tarry, you wait before going there because you know that you are going to work this particular miracle of raising him from the dead so that people might believe. It's not a matter of indifference to you. And when you arrive there and you see Mary and Martha so distraught at the death of their brother, when you see the other Jews there crying, you, Lord, weep. You cry. That's not the action of a God who is indifferent. God who only pretended to come in the flesh, as the Docetists believed. A God who was merely an abstraction that said, well, okay, you know, this is the will of God, this is the will of the Father, go to Mass on Sundays, that's it, get out of here. No, Lord, you're one of us. And you have human feelings. And you have friends. You pop by to see Lazarus and Mary and Martha. You call by to have dinner with them. And Mary's there hanging off your every word. Martha is busy trying to fuss around, get everything ready for dinner. Look good, make a good impression. How often, you know, as a priest, I might go to someone's place for dinner. And many times, you know, it's very common that you have to give quite a bit of notice, you know, because people are worried about the impression that they're going to make, even though you know them very well. And, you know, there's usually quite a lot of fuss and there's concern that, you know, oh my goodness, you know, what happens if Father sees the laundry? There's dirty washing in the laundry. Oh no, we've got to get the laundry spick and span because otherwise... Why? I mean, he might walk past the laundry at some stage if he goes to the toilet and then, you know, it's got to be just right and... it's ridiculous, but that's how we are, you know. And you see Martha there fussing away, you know, and then Mary's just hanging out. Look, Lord, tell her to come and help me. Tell my sister. Tell my sister. Martha, Martha, you worry about so many things. Only one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the better part. But Lord, you know, you speak with that familiarity, with that affection. And you do the same with us, and we too with our friends. When we're really friends with people, we know them, they know us, but we really, you know, we're not putting up a pretense. There's no technique, there's no special way of doing things. It's just we are who we are, and they know it, and we know it. And then we are able to demand of people, because we know what they are capable of. And many times our apostle is simply encouraging others, being by their side and saying, you can do it. You can do it. It's possible. Because so often, you know, people think, well, I've tried, but I've failed. No, it's just all too hard. I'm a write-off. Forget about me. Go, save yourself. It's like one fellow who's now a priest, but when he was in the seminary, he was telling us the story of when he was a university student at a residence like Warang. And, you know, he had an agreement to get to Mass with some of the others. You know, yes, I want to get to Mass. Yes, I want to get to Mass. But he never made it to Mass. He was too lazy. And one morning, one of the guys would go there, knock on his door. Come on, you know, we're going to get a Mass. He goes, no, save yourself. Save yourself. Run without me. Just leave me. You know, anyway, they persevered, obviously, so he could get out of bed to get to Mass. But that's the thing, that's friendship. That's really, in the end, you know, where we have that confidence with each other. And the closer we come to you, Lord, the more We draw closer to others. Our Lady is so close to the apostles, to her cousin, to the people around her. And it's because she is totally given over to you, Lord. She sees the needs that other people have, and she acts upon that. You know, to see a need and to act upon it. This is like Mary MacKillop. Do we see the needs of the others? If we pray, we will see. We're able to get outside of our own little world. And then, you know, not only to see it, some people can be introspective, quiet, and they can see, therefore, the faults of the others. And they're able to judge and to criticize. You have to be careful, you know, people who don't speak too often. What are they thinking? But charity, love of you, Lord, is what leads us to take action. To be bothered to try to help other people. And it's a tough call because it means, you know, we have to give of ourselves. And it's not an easy task. It's not simply a question of saying, hey, you need to improve in this area. And they go, oh, okay, great. And then they improve in that area. And then, oh, thank you very much. That would be very rare. Many times, you know, we have our habits, we have our bad habits, and it takes a long time to overcome them. And it means tremendous patience on the part of those who can see that good but need to try to bring it out, to nurture it. I don't think any of us have been into gardening. We probably learn a lot from gardening. You know, the patience required. I don't have it. Maybe one of these days. But that's what it means to cultivate our friends, like different weeds in the garden, you know, sort of cultivating these. Well, a weed, what is a weed? A weed is just an unwanted plant. You know, it's just a plant or a plant in the wrong place. Well, you know, our friends, we have to put them in the right place and want them, to cultivate them. And those weeds will turn into flowers. If we have your love, if we follow in the school of Mary.
That was Living Faith with Father Richard Umbers. For more, go to cradio.org.au.